Hello and welcome again to Knowing the Score and to my kitchen. Yes, in our continuing exploration of orchestration, we're walking around the percussion section, those players who stand or sit at the back of the orchestra, wielding various cudgels, sticks, and their hands to bang things to provide rhythm, colour, mark climaxes, and perform many other interesting functions. Drumming and clanging are part of human culture that go way back into prehistory, for dancing, drawing people together, for going into battle. As the orchestra developed, percussion instruments got drawn in to represent these human activities, but also to produce more subtle emotions and feelings, as we shall hear. Let's start with Shostakovich's Tahiti Trot that introduces these programmes. I'm going to play the whole thing for you to listen to. Which percussion instruments can you identify? Remember that hitting and banging is the main means of noise making. Thank you. Did you hear there the cymbals, snare or side drum, woodblocks, glockenspiel and celesta, used by Dmitri Shostakovich? That's a mixture of tuned percussion, where a specific note is produced when the instrument is hit or tapped, like with a tinkling glockenspiel, or untuned, where there's a general sound, as with the cymbal. Let's start with the tuned percussion. The timpani or kettle drums are the longest-serving orchestral percussion instruments. You can see the timpanist sitting in state at the back of the orchestra, surrounded by 2 to 4 big drums that are tuned to the notes that the composer wants. The tension of the drum determines the note played. Here is the double-double-double beat of the thundering drum in Handel's Ode for St. Cecilia's Day, the patron saint of music. Definite military connection there for the timpani. The trumpet's loud clangour from Ode for St. Cecilia's Day by George Frederick Handel. As with all the drums, you can produce a rolling sound by rapid movement of the sticks, or by making individual or rhythmic strokes, as in that piece. Here's a wonderful long roll from Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony that culminates in a sudden crescendo that launches the main agitated theme of the movement. Tchaikovsky using a timpani roll to great effect, and now Beethoven using the rhythm of timpani strokes. They are a key element in the profound D minor opening movement of the choral symphony, emphasizing the key rhythmic features of the main theme. at the climax, they thunder out Beethoven's universal angst. And timpani strokes also guide the final crescendo in this first movement of Beethoven's Choral Symphony. Turn over the page in Beethoven's score, and there they are again, tuned an octave apart in the scherzo. The dotted beat of the thundering drum in the scherzo of Beethoven's Choral Symphony. It's rather neat to use the timpani to start your compositions, as these composers found. Some of these examples go by quite fast, so stay alert. Thank you. timpani strokes or rolls starting in order. Haydn's Drum Roll Symphony No. 103, one can see where it got its name from. 4 tapped notes at the start of Beethoven's Violin Concerto, providing a nidus rhythm for the whole movement. The droning funeral march sound with muted timpani at the start of the third movement of Mahler's First Symphony. The famous opening of Grieg's Piano Concerto. A thumped duo of notes that set up the rhythm at the start of the third movement of Mahler's Second Symphony. The skipping timpani notes that set off the fun in the second movement of Saint-Saëns' Second Piano Concerto. The opening of HMS Pinafore by Sullivan. Thundering drums at the start of Mahler's Seventh Symphony Finale. And finally, the tune on the drums at the start of Richard Strauss's Burlesque for piano and orchestra. Richard Strauss there used 4 timpani and 1 player to play that tune. If your name is Hector Berlioz, you use 4 timpani and 3 players, and you get them to play very softly together, as in Distant Thunder. Or they play loudly together as menacing tumbrils rolling towards the scaffold. Two very original uses of kettle drums from the third and fourth movements of Berlioz's well-named Fantastic Symphony. With modern kettle drums, one can even orchestrate a change of tuning, as Bartok does in his Concerto for Orchestra. Let's return to the Fantastic Symphony for our next tuned percussion instrument, tubular bells. Here they play in Berlioz's Black Sabbath. Thank you. tolling bells from Berlioz. Now they toll in Saturn, the bringer of old age, by Holst. He instructs that the bells be hit with a metal mallet, making them sound stern and ineluctable. And when the bells toll for a rather more gentle vision of old age, Holst uses soft mallets. Bells Across the Decades, The End of Saturn, The Bringer of Old Age from Gustav Holst's suite, The Planets. Tchaikovsky scored a whole peal of bells at the end of the 1812 overture, but I don't have a cathedral in the studio, so I'm going to bypass that noise. Let's stay with tuned bell sounds, this time in a higher range, an import from the military bands, the Glockenspiel. The first time I played in an orchestra, it was the Glockenspiel. Here is that piece of music.
Thank you.
Alexander Luzzini's Ballet Egyptienne with a nice glock solo at the end, the same tune that the deep tuba played at the start of that excerpt. I once dropped my glockenspiel down a flight of steps. Now there's a sound. Here's a more conventional use of the glockenspiel. Glockenspiel embellishing Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty Waltz. The glockenspiel consists of tuned metal bars that the player taps with light wooden sticks. The xylophone substitutes metal bars with wooden ones. Odd that wood would conjure up rattling bones for Camille Saint-Saëns. The orchestral debut of the xylophone in Danse Macabre by Saint-Saëns. I wonder if you picked up the percussive sound of violins playing col legno in that excerpt. The xylophone is the only orchestral instrument that has a political history, if one ignores the role that wars play in politics, in which case the drums and the cymbals have political histories. The xylophone was used by Shostakovich as a means of expression of his feelings about his nemesis, Joseph Stalin. He uses it in a number of his 15 symphonies. Here is a prominent xylophone part from his 14th symphony. The jaunty tune is in fact based on a 12-note series, one in the eye for Stalin with his musical minions, who did not approve of this technique. Listen out for the other percussion instruments at play here, the celesta, three drums, and a temple or wood block.
Сегодня он умрет, как умирают розы. Мой маленький солдат, любовник мой.
Shostakovich, who had a special affinity for the xylophone and was also a percussion orchestration wizard. The three drums we heard there in the fifth movement of his 14th symphony were not tuned, but one still had a sense of lower or higher. That's a function of the size of the drum. Now that we are with drums that, unlike the kettle drums, are not tuned, let's turn to the snare drum, also known as the side drum, a classic military instrument. You may have noticed that it has appeared in every Knowing the Score program except the one that featured the French horn. Yes, Bolero, that side drum rhythm is there from the start, pianissimo, to finish, fortissimo. To prevent a descent into hypnotic trance or severe boredom in his side drum player, Ravel employs two side drummers to play tag and then to play together ever louder in the final segment. Enough! Here now is a notorious side drum roll, followed by an excellent example of its ability to provide a rhythmic lead. Rossini nearly got assassinated for his use of the side drum to start that, his overture to the Thieving Magpie. You can loosen the snare of the side drum and get this sound. ¶¶ snareless tocking sounds from the side drum from Bartok in the second movement of his Concerto for Orchestra. Untuned percussion instruments came into the Western Orchestra from the East, known as Turkish music, definitely martial in origin. Here is Haydn's deployment of the cymbals, bass drum and triangle in his so-called military symphony. A trumpet fanfare makes this obvious. Welcoming triangle, cymbals and bass drum into his symphonies for the one and only time was Franz Joseph Haydn. Mozart and Beethoven likewise eschewed these sounds in their symphonies. Well, Beethoven only let them in at the last minute and for specific military purposes. Did you notice that with the percussion in that march from the finale of his choral symphony, Beethoven brought in the piccolo to make his military intentions clear? They all come in again at the end of this great symphony, number 9 of 9, to encourage us to humanistically split infinitives and fight against the darkness.
Yeah!
bang, crash and wallop at the end of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, cymbals, bass drum and triangle, the advance guard for wider percussion sounds in the classical orchestra and its descendants. Bass drums and cymbals play together in another style as employed by Mahler in his hurdy-gurdy moment we heard in the oboe programme. Boom, crash, boom, crash. Roadside music making brought into the orchestra by Gustav Mahler in the third movement of his first symphony. You might have noted Collegno's strings bouncing the wood of the bow off the strings, as you will remember, adding to that rhythm. A few minutes later, this happens. Classic cymbal crash to wake us all up and to mark the end of the anguished introduction to the fourth movement of Mahler's first symphony. You may also have picked up a cymbal roll in there. We will return to that cymbal option in a moment. Here's a set of cymbal crashes from Tchaikovsky. If you are a cardiologist, you may well have recognized atrial fibrillation in music with the rushing atrial strings and the irregular ventricular cymbal crashes. Striking and exciting orchestration in Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet fantasy overture. My favorite of all cymbal crashes occurs in the slow movement of Bruckner's Seventh Symphony. After a long, slow build-up of his wonderful theme, Bruckner releases the tension with a cymbal crash at the climax. In the whole hour-long symphony, this is the only thing the percussionist does, apart from twiddling of thumbs, but every cent of pay is justified. Listen also for the role of the timpani in this crescendo and climax. marvellous Bruckner apotheosis. Two cymbals satisfyingly clash together at the musical zenith. One cymbal can't crash alone, unless the player drops it, which at music school they're taught not to do, but a goodly sound can be made if you suspend the cymbal and play a roll on it or hit it with various forms of strick. A suspended cymbal roll can sound menacing. Wolf! Wolf! Peter's wolf, given character by a suspended cymbal. At the end of Peter and the Wolf, the captured creature becomes a suspended cymbal. There was a suspended cymbal crash in Tahiti Trot. Now to the big bass drum. In the horn programme, I promised you a recapitulation of the start of Mahler's Third Symphony. It features a deep, soft bass drum tattoo that sets the stage for the next section, in which the drum underpins the funereal rhythm of the trombones. Also a nice cymbal crash and a couple of side drum snatches to enjoy here before the bass drum comes to the fore, softly. A soft bass drum amongst angry, anxious strings and muted trumpets and wailing winds at the start of Mahler's Third Symphony. We're running out of time, but before I'm gonged out of the studio, here is a gong or tam-tam. Marking the change from angst to despair, a wonderful orchestral moment in Tchaikovsky's Pathetique Symphony. Thank you. a nice gong resonance with which to end our exploration of percussion orchestration. Well, at least for this week. Next week we'll have a few more tinkles and crashes. So it's going, going. From me, Tony Westwood, and Knowing the Score. Goodbye.